chat with Nicholas. He'll listen to you. Then he'll laugh, and then he'll cry with you. It's all in a safe space for you to speak your truth. Oh, come and chat with me.
So today we've got Alex Urban, and today we're going to talk a little bit about personal branding. We're going to talk about media buying, and Alex is a guy who just mentioned to me has done a couple of million dollars in sales online over the past couple of years. So we're going to go into that into a little bit of detail. So Alex, good to have you on board. Whereabouts in the world are you?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm currently located in Salt Lake City, Utah, but I'm traveling very frequently, but this is a home base.
So Salt Lake City doesn't scream couture, doesn't scream fashion. Why are you in Salt Lake?
I was actually born and raised here. I traveled around, lived in a few different states, a few different countries, but this has always kind of been home. And, you know, I have a very large business network here. And so, you know, talking about just kind of going through the journey of life strategically, it makes the most sense to be here for now, but not forever, but for now, for sure.
Cool. Well, it looks pretty toasty there. I'm in Oslo, so we're slowly going into winter. So we're going to be having our hoodies and our winter apparel. So possibly some customers for you there. Let's talk about media buying. What type of, I mean, we're talking in the millions of dollars here of media buying. Some folks are lucky if they do $100,000 of media buying in their entire life. Tell me about some of the stresses and strains of spending $1 million plus on buying media.
Oh, for sure. So I always like to tell people, I'm like, look, man, if you like going to a casino, if you like gambling, media buying is the perfect career for you, right? It's literally like showing up every day and you almost have like a digital slot machine that you're putting money in. And there's certain controllables that you can do to obviously increase your chances of succeeding with media buying. But to a lot of people, especially getting started in the space, it almost is like a slot machine, right? So I always recommend to people, no matter what, that like while you're starting, there's no real need to start at very large budgets. Like I feel like no matter what kind of industry you're in, if you're selling products that are within like the, let's say $20 to $80 range, you shouldn't need to spend more than $100 per day with your ads, especially on Facebook, Instagram, to get started. The reason I recommend doing low budgets is because you need to start figuring out what ad creatives, what offers, what angles actually get traction and get people to come off of these social networks and come onto your website to transact with you. A lot of people think that like, oh, if I just go spend $1,000 on this deal, it's going to bring in money. And that's not the truth. Like, especially when we're talking about what platform you're running ads on, people are not going on Facebook to shop. People are not going on Instagram to shop. You're almost like a kiosk in the mall where people see you and you have to create something so appealing that it takes them off of an app they went to with a different intention onto your store and then convince them without ever speaking to them to make a purchase and transact with your brand and your products. So there's so many things that go into that, but you know, honestly, every day, like when you're running a business that's so majorly focused on paid advertising and performance marketing, you have to have so many things dialed in. But once you get your offer dialed in, once you get your creatives dialed in, you start to understand that there's certain conversion ratios throughout that process. And from there, that's when you can then confidently start spending $1,000 a day, $5,000 a day, $10,000 a day. But until you really understand those conversion metrics over a long enough time and after enough impressions, it's very much like gambling until you dial that in. So strategically, the way to go about it, get your stuff dialed in and then start, you know, pulling the bigger levers. But until you kind of figure out how to play the game, be very conservative with it. So just my suggestion.
So some really great insights. And I love that I've never heard that before, that Instagram and Facebook are like kiosks. I think that's in a mall. I think that's a really good way of bringing it back to reality. Let's talk some timing here. 1 week, 1 month, 1 year. How long did it take you to become an overnight success? You know, years, right?
My overnight success story is now 6.5 years in the making. So it definitely was not overnight. I originally started getting into the internet marketing space to do digital marketing agency services. So like running ads for local businesses and online. And at that time I was playing with like very low budgets. I then started my own e-commerce business. Then I went and worked under a few different mentors. Then I started my own e-commerce business. And then I worked with the largest business as the CMO that I ever worked with. We took them from literally zero to the first 90 days that I was working for them. We went from literally $0 to $960,000 in sales in the first 90 days. And within the 3-year period that I was working with them, we did $19.6 million in sales. And just to kind of give you an idea of how much sales that actually is, our main products were $35 a piece. So, you know, volume wise, it's a very large scale. We're not selling $400, $500, $600 products. We're talking, you know, 8 figures in product sales, you know, 2-digit product. So yeah, it's taken a very long time. It's taken a lot of testing. It's taken a lot of money. I've made a lot of money. I've lost even more money, but like, that's all part of the game. You have to learn. And now that I've, you know, kind of honed in these skills, now this is something where I love like teaching people how to do, because it's, you know, I hope that my 6.5-year overnight success, the help and information I can provide people will maybe turn their overnight success to 2 years, 3 years, not 6.5, but it's never going to happen overnight, unfortunately.
So one of the things that you mentioned there, which I want to dive into a little bit, is some of the failures, because those are more exciting than the successes, because nobody, honestly, you know, nobody's really that excited about successes. I heard this great story about it was a General Electric guy who had a $9 million failure at a plant, and it was a catastrophe, and he managed to fix it. He brought the team together. They fixed the problem, but $9 million, poof, down the drain. And an executive came from wherever the head office of GE is and came to the factory. And this guy thought, for sure, he's going to get fired. Mm-hmm. And promptly was promoted. And he said, well, what have I done to, you know, I've just lost you $9 million. Well, he said, I've just invested $9 million in you. There's no ways I'm getting rid of you. You've had a $9 million lesson. What is your $9 million lesson that you've learned, Alex?
You know, there's been multiples of them. There's multiple times, especially in the apparel business that I helped grow. There were times where we literally scaled so fast with our sales that we hadn't been able to keep up on order fulfillment. And that cost us literally like 100. I think the biggest mistake we had at that within our first 90 days was a $120,000 mistake, where essentially we were printing all of our shirts in-house to get them out to our clients. We couldn't keep up with production. We sent a bunch of blank shirts up to another vendor who promised that they could get the shirts done. They messed every single one of the shirts done. We had to go rebuy the inventory. We had to repay employees to get the merch stamped out and sent out. And altogether, that cost us about $120,000. That's just one of the many mistakes that we had made along the way. But it's like in that lesson, again, it's a very expensive lesson, but the lesson that we learned in that is like, A, how important it is to like clearly communicate with your customers, how to set the expectations, and how to just like admit like when you went wrong. Like when we're telling customers and showing them that our business is building so fast and now we're like, hey, we can't keep up with orders, people almost kind of get a little bit excited. They're like, hey, my order is still in line, even though they're growing so fast. And as you continue to communicate with them and say, hey, your order is going to be late, it's going to be delayed, here's what's going on, you know, it creates a customer that's still going to come back and buy from you. Whereas we could have hidden on the other side of the business, not answered any emails, bullshitted our way around it, and then you never have a customer who comes back and buys. You essentially burn them there, you know, and they're never going to do business with you or transact with you again. So the lesson to us that we learned through there is just the importance of communication to our customers, because even when you in a business hit a rough spot or a bad spot, and every single business will, the better that you communicate with your customers, the better that's going to end up for you long-term. So always be open, transparent with customers. It was even at a point during that time where we were trying to get all the orders out to our customers. We're like, hey, we're sorry. We fucked up. Here's what's going on. Here's a coupon for 50% off your next order. We literally did like $50,000 in sales through that 50% off. And so like even delayed us more, but it was like, it just showed that the more open and honest we were with our customers, that was a great example of like a lesson that we had to pay to learn. But those customers came back for life and it ended up working out.
Well, I love that example because it's so true. If you have an opportunity to communicate with a customer during a poor experience and you show that you listen to them and that you care about them and that you're actually, you know, putting effort into the engagement, like you said, you could have a customer for life, and it gave you an opportunity for that 50% coupon as well.
Exactly.
So extra sales. So what's that? Cursed by success almost. So that's a good, that's a really good example. When you're talking of spending, you know, $10,000, $50,000, $100,000 a day or a week, etc., what kind of, for the rest of us who don't get, you know, we're in Europe, we don't necessarily, and Africa, we don't necessarily have those kind of enormous budgets because of the sizes of our markets. How is the engagement with the likes of Facebook, Instagram, Google, when you are starting to spend those numbers?
it's incredibly important when you are starting, but I don't think it's as important once it grows. The reason I say that is like when you initially launch an ad, it has zero engagement on it, zero likes, zero comments, zero shares. What people like to see is that they're transacting with something that has demand. So when they see your ad and it has no social proof, your conversion rates are going to be tremendously lower than they are once you have a certain amount of social proof on there. So, you know, once you get a few hundred likes, once you get a few hundred comments, once you get a few hundred shares, now you have enough validity where it's kind of like the switch is now on. And I don't think it necessarily, at least in our case, it really mattered if we had 500 comments versus 5,000 comments. That kind of just showed like at that point, it's just like extra customers engaging with your brand, which created larger audiences for you to target with, you know, more targeted ads. But I think it's like once you have a certain level of engagement, anything over that, it's cool. But initially, like when people look at your ad, it's like, hey, is there enough demand? Is there enough light? Is there enough desire for this product or this offer that's been in front of me? That's what actually gets people moving. But, you know, if you have an ad with zero engagement on it, very hard to get anybody to transact with you because they could see your ad and be like, hey, never heard of this company before. I don't trust them. This looks a little bit scammy. You know, I'm kind of questioning this. But once you have enough on there, I feel like it's kind of a switch where, you know, even at a higher price point, you're even at a higher spend rate, it doesn't really matter as much. Now, there is a section of engagement, which is important when you are spending that much money. And that's specifically when we talk about video ads and watch through rate on your videos, right? So it's like, we want people watching as much of our videos as possible, because that's creating an audience. People are interested in the product or the offer that we're then retargeting on the back end. The most successful ads that we ever have ran have been video ads where they have literally like millions and millions of views on there. Let's say there's an audience, you know, 100,000 people who watch 97% of that video. We turn them into an audience on Facebook, run ads to them, and it's almost like shooting fish in a barrel. You know, your returns on it are so incredibly high. So likes, comments, it's once you have some, it's good. But specifically when you're talking about video, that plays a huge role into like scaling ads, is getting more and more people to watch because you're creating an audience, people who are interested in your product, where you can retarget them with a different ad and scrape up that revenue from there.
So let's go into some of the technical elements. So you're talking about Facebook, you're talking about, we spoke about Instagram a little bit earlier. Are you using the native platforms on Facebook, like the Meta Suite and that, or are you using sort of bespoke technology or different platforms? When you scale, what is there available for you, and how do you need to change how you operate?
Yep. So there's a bunch of things that goes into that, right? So we're talking about like scaling on such a large scale. There's a lot of things that go into that. Like when you start spending 10 grand a day, $25,000 a day, $50,000 a day across all these platforms, now you're looking at like an entire ecosystem where everything has to be so dialed in that it makes sense to spend that money. Like, I don't think you understand, or a lot of people understand, that spending $20,000 a day, $50,000 a day, a 1% conversion rate on your ads can mean that you either lost $20,000 in a day or you made $20,000 in a day. Every little thing needs to be dialed in, right? So when we're talking about like scaling at that type of level, you need to make sure that everything is dialed in. Your initial ads, your top of funnel ads, middle of funnel ads, bottom of funnel ads, retargeting ads, your emails, your SMS, like everything needs to be perfected and dialed in, because one little leak in your ship will cost you a tremendous amount of money, right? On top of that, we also need to talk about the importance of like tracking your data and your data and your conversions, because of all the updates that iOS came out with, because of all the updates that, you know, Apple and, or the confliction that Apple and Facebook have together. It's like, you no longer have accurate tracking on your debt on your ads once you get to a certain amount of spend. So now we have to start plugging in third-party softwares like Hyros or Triple Whale. And now we can actually start seeing a little bit more transparent ads compared to what's being reported. When you start spending across all these platforms, here's a perfect example. One of the months we ended up doing, it was over $1 million. I can't remember what the exact number was, but we'll just call it $1 million. We saw that the reported revenue that we made from all these ad platforms was like, again, we're going to keep this simple for your listeners, $250,000 on Facebook, $250,000 on Google, $250,000 on Pinterest, and $250,000 on email, right? So reported $1 million worth of revenue. While our Shopify store actually showed $700,000 in sales. So what happens is a lot of these platforms start claiming sales from each other, and we call that cross attribution, meaning that Facebook made a sale, but it was actually the email that made the sale, because someone came off of Facebook and onto our website, put their email in a pop-up, and then we emailed them, and that's what got the sale. But the email software is like, hey, I got that sale. But Facebook's like, no, that's my sale. And then Google's like, oh, they Googled us, so that's my sale. And so that's one of the hardest part about scaling at that level, is that you don't truly know what is like bringing you in actual revenue, because people are seeing your ads on Google, on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it now, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, email, SMS. So that becomes a big shit show in itself. It's just like tracking where your revenue is actually coming from. And that's when you have to, at scale, start simplifying your metrics, being like, okay, how much should we spend today? How much should we make today? What CPA am I okay to, you know, spend up to my cost per acquisition on each platform? And so you start to look at different metrics as you scale and as you start to spend more. But again, there's so many complexities at that rate of spend, as far as you need to make sure you have no holes in the ship. You need to be able to track where your revenue is coming from as accurate as you possibly can. And then secondly, you need to understand what are the important metrics to look at, such as like your CPA, CPM, and CTRs. So I hope that goes.
Yeah. So quite a lot to digest there. And I think, as you mentioned, the complexity of that cross-contamination of data from, or cross-attribution of data, is definitely an issue that people are finding, especially with GDPR and all of these new data protection acts, and especially with Apple, you know, stopping tracking devices on a lot of their devices. And I like the way that you've simplified it back down to your, you know, cost per acquisition and your click-through rates, and how you scale, your system actually gets a bit simpler. You go back to nuts and bolts. How much have I spent, and how much am I getting in sales? So that's a really good, very interesting sort of counterintuitive insight, because you think the more data that you have, the more dialed in you can get into the nitty gritty. But it's, even these big companies don't know exactly what's going on. So, and talking about that a little bit more, the industry has changed quite a bit, and I'm imagining that you have a MBA and a PhD in analytics, because you've, you know, you're doing millions of dollars of sales and you're doing all of these high-end analytics. So do you need to be a literal rocket scientist to do this work?
Absolutely not. Honestly, everything that I learned actually come from experience. I actually almost failed going through high school. I wasn't able to get accepted into any colleges. My grades are so low. So I'm not some person who has a PhD or a degree in any of this. It's just literally starting my own business from, here's a business I have, spending $10 a day, to ultimately working up, learning through failure, learning through my successes, learning from other mentors, other coaches, make sure and like increase my speed rate in which I'm like acquiring knowledge. And then eventually you're like, oh shit, now I don't spend $10 a day. Now I spend $100 a day. And now I spend $1,000 a day. Now I spend $10,000. And as you go through that journey, and as you go through that growth, you're going to continue to learn. And I don't think there's any better way to learn than through experience, because there's no place in the world, no class, no school, no university that you could go to where they could teach you how Facebook's algorithm works while spending money through their ad platform, because it literally changes every day almost. Unless you have a real life pulse on what's going on with your ads and you're looking at the data and the metrics every single day, you can't teach that to anybody. So you're almost forced to learn through experience in this type of industry, because it changes so quickly. There are some evergreens that it's like, it'll always be around. There's always marketing 101 or marketing psychology 101. But specifically when we're talking about running ads and spending money to grow a business, there's no way to learn it other than just sheer experience and putting your credit card in the system and in the life.
Well, hopefully my students at my school will contradict you a little bit, but we're a vocational school. So we do physical, you know, we do physical activities. And because the industry is changing so quickly, we do hands-on, we do what's happening today. We don't look at sort of legacy information. So I'll challenge you on that. And maybe you can come and do a masterclass, or just show us an hour in your day and show how you're buying, how your team are buying. That would be fascinating, just as a case study, to see how this really works.
Of course, more than happy to.
Earlier, you spoke about the importance of, or we spoke about the importance of personal branding, or the importance of brands, building a personal brand online. How important is building a personal brand when building, you know, apparel brands like yourself online?
I think, honestly, there's literally nothing that you could take more serious or put more attention into and get a bigger payoff than building a very strong personal brand. And this doesn't matter if you're leveraging a personal brand with building an apparel company, a jewelry company, a candle company, a coaching company, a landscaping company. Everything right now, I feel like, is revolving around you and your personal brand, right? We're in a state right now where I'm seeing that people are no longer buying from brands, right? They're buying from people that they trust and they connect with. We're always going to have the big legacy brands like Apple or Coca-Cola, you know, that we're going to buy from just because of what they built hundreds of years ago, or with Apple's growth, however long they started to go, right? Yeah. But now people are like they're paying very much attention into what am I actually spending my money on? And they're wanting to have their money go to people that they truly support and people that have provided value back to them in their life. So I personally feel like with the apparel brand that we grew, the owner of the company had a very large personal brand. And he'd been speaking the brand's name, which was Lions Not Sheep, as a mantra out to his audience. And him being a life coach, helping so many people build, you know what I mean, help them progress through life. That once we decided to open the business, that's where I feel like it was like the gasoline on the fire, because there had been so many people, literally hundreds of thousands of people. He had over 1 billion views on his organic videos, right, of helping people. That in turn turned into just an absolute tidal wave of customers coming through our door. So to me, it's like people are very tribal. They want to belong to something. They want to be a part of something. And people no longer, like, they don't get emotionally connected to a brand anymore that just had come out the gates, right? If I wearing a hat, you know what I mean? And I'm like, hey, go buy this green hat. I'm not going to be emotionally invested into the hat. But if I'm like, hey, I've been following Alex. He's provided value to me. He's helped me grow in other areas of life. I like his style. He makes me laugh. I'm going to support him and buy whatever he wants. And that's why I tell people, because of like my personal brand that I built, I can go sell jewelries, I can sell t-shirts, I can sell coaching, I can sell probably popsicles, or, you know, go mow someone's lawn, and people buy from me at a mass rate because of the personal brand that I've built and I've developed through providing value to others. So especially while you're growing your business right now, people love the transparency. They love knowing who actually is operating the business. I don't think you're going to get traction very easily. And I think you're almost playing on expert mode if you decide, I want to hide behind the computer, I don't want to show my face, and I just want to have this little cosmetic brand. And you're trying to put together deals and all this manipulative type marketing to go ahead and get sales in the door. I don't think that's any way to truly build a genuine and authentic brand right now. I think they want to see the people behind the scenes. I think they want to see what your warehouses look like, your offices look like. I think they want to see the owner going in there and throwing around cash bonuses to their employees, or, you know, the owner running around like teasing the brand new t-shirt design that they have on. It's like, that's what gets people so emotionally connected to your brand that it truly will grow it in the long term. Like with the apparel brand, our lifetime value of a customer was over $400 with our brand. And that says something again for selling a $35 product. That means the average person, which is crazy because that's the average. There's a lot of people who went in there and bought just one t-shirt or just two. That's still $70.
Yeah.
We had a lot of customers spending over $1,000 with our brand. And again, it's like, that's a lot of t-shirts to buy, but why did they do that? It's because they're so emotionally connected to us as a brand. And a lot of that was fueled by the gas that we poured on the fire of having strong personal brands within the company. Myself, the owner, our warehouse guys, every single person had a personal brand that was showing, you know, us building the business together. And through that support, it really amplified the growth of the business like tenfold.
Well, that's such a fascinating breakdown of the change in branding in society, because I come from a really classical brand background. I've worked for the largest brand agencies in the world, and we've built bank brands, airlines, etc. And in came Shutterstock 10 years ago with where you could build a logo quickly. Then you had all of these AI logo builders, and brand agencies were thinking, oh, well, gosh, we're losing money because now somebody can create a logo for $5 or for free, basically. And what you've spoken about is the natural human sort of progression from when there were only 10 brands and you knew what those brands stood for, your decision-making was relatively easy. Now, where there's millions of faceless brands, like you said, you don't know where they come from. You can't get your money back if they disappear. What you're talking about is going back to the fundamentals of the brand. People know you. They can call you out if the seams come undone, if the print comes off, etc. And you build that tribe, like you mentioned. And that's what brands are about. It's about association and with a specific tribe. So, you know, I'm going to write that down because that's literally such a perfect exemplar of of how branding has changed. We want authenticity, and modern brands and brands like yourself are delivering that.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, people, again, they want to connect with other people, you know, and they want to be a part of the journey. Like, you have to imagine, like, when you're building your brand, especially like through your personal brand, right? You yourself are an entertainer. You yourself are like a movie. Your movie has characters, it has plots, it has twists, it has everything like that. And again, that's what gets somebody emotionally invested into you. And that turns into a transaction after a long enough period of time.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very important to have a personal brand that's leading a brand. And especially because I can even say this from experience, a lot of the e-commerce brands that I've built, they buy more through the person's Instagram than they do the brand's Instagram or the brand's page. It's like, they'll go to my Instagram, see the product I'm selling and purchase my product. They're not going to go to my company's Instagram and buy through there. So it's like, we're in a cycle where it's like, we went from, again, having a leader of a brand to having faceless brands. And I think it's just history repeating itself. You see it happen all the time. But we're going back to that point where it's like, hey, Ted down the shop, he's got the best, you know, barbershop. I'm going to go to Ted because I love Ted. He's great, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, there's a million of them out there, but I know him. I know his dog. I know his wife. They've stopped in the shop. Like, people just want to be, you know, emotionally connected to brands and support people that have a cause that aligns with their core values and beliefs that they stand for.
Yeah. So that emotional connection, that honesty and that authenticity, I think, again, you may as well just be reading out the brand fundamentals from a textbook here, Alex. Building your own brand. And, you know, if we look at the likes, I'm not going to associate you with Bill Cosby and OJ Simpson and folks like that, but they made a couple of big bugger ups in their businesses, and the folks that they associated with, you know, regret that now. How do you mitigate, what are your risk factors or risk management for your own brand? Because as you said, people are buying into you and into your founder's business. How do you mitigate that? Surely you must have haters out there.
I love the haters, man. Honestly, I think the more you actually try and mitigate the risk, the worse you're actually doing for yourself and your brand. Like, I think you're doing yourself a disservice by holding yourself back from sharing your truth or your life, because you don't realize, but out of the billions and billions of people that are, you know, on this planet, there are so many people that resonate with you, the skeletons you have in your closet, your deepest, darkest secrets, the truth that you are withholding. I think, like, as a personal brand, you have to be so authentic and you have to share your truth, whether it hurts people's opinions or not. Like, there's been times where I've shared stuff on social media about, like, me drinking too much or me smoking weed or doing drugs or whatever. And like, part of me is like, I don't want to share this. Like, I have my family on social media. I have coworkers on social media. Like, all these people are going to judge me. Yet my inbox is literally flooded every single day of messages being like, from people saying, Alex, you've helped me. This is the message I need to hear today. I need to hear from you that I'm not alone in this journey. And of course you're going to have the haters, but it's like, the more talk and the more commotion, the better it is for the end of the day at your brand. Like, a perfect example of that would be like Jake Paul, right? Jake Paul, YouTube boxer, whatever you want to call him. Everybody on here listening probably knows who Jake Paul is, right?
Yeah.
He's made an enormous amount of money off the people who love him, but he's made even more money off the people who hate him. He's doing zero risk mitigation. He's just being him and he's profiting from both sides. So I feel like, you know, especially when you're talking about a personal brand and authenticity, the more you continue to hold back your truth and the more you put out content that's inauthentic, people are starting to really see through that bullshit, and they're never going to connect with you on the level that you need to be successful if you just continue to lie to them, if you continue to put on a facade. Share your truth, share your darkest moments in life, because that's what like truly connects with people. We've fronted so much of like social media since its original time of like conception with all these fake realities, flying on jets, driving around Ferraris, you know what I mean? Wearing Rolexes, whatever it is. And it's like, it got to a point where it was so inauthentic that people are like almost puking in their mouth a little bit. Like, I don't want to see another dude on his jet. I don't give a fuck. Like, what have you done to actually help people? What are the struggles that have gone through? What are the demons that you've had to face to get on that jet? That's what I want to connect with. Because if I know that, like, one of my friends, Eric, he literally is worth $500 million. He used to be a heroin addict. Like, sharing his truth about getting sober and not being, or getting off the heroin, that connects him more with his audience than his private jet does, or his yacht does, or his, you know, whatever $20-50 million mansion does in Florida. So it's like, you have to, again, genuinely connect with people through your struggles. That's what is going to connect you with people, not the flaunts, not the perfect life. People just don't have that anymore, man. So that's my two cents.
So you talk about giving back. What are some activities or projects that you're working on that are close to your heart that are examples of this?
Well, I have a jewelry company right now that was actually inspired when I was on a trip to Maui. So one of the things I'm doing is with all the proceeds of that jewelry company, we're donating a portion of the profits over to helping rebuild Maui because they had a bunch of big wildfires there. That's something I believe in. With me too, I also am like a huge proponent helping with anything that has to do with like child sex trafficking. So there's some local organizations here that I'm working closely with to donate time and money to help do that. But it's like any way that you can give back, man. Like I had a kid yesterday literally reach out to me. I do one-on-one coaching, life coaching, business coaching, and I charge a lot of money for it. And it's like even whatever opportunities I can help give back, like this kid who messaged me yesterday is like, hey, I'm a junior in high school. So 16 years old. He's like, I want to start making money. I want to start growing a brand. Like, where do I start? It's like, to me, that's an opportunity to help give back to somebody. Or, hey, my business is struggling. Can I get on a quick call with you to get some things worked out? Sure. It's like when I see people, it's like, I'm not always trying to monetize from a capitalistic point of like, hey, I'm a coach. I want to help people. But there also comes a time where it's like someone just kind of stumbles into your life and you're like, you know, that little 1 degree shift that you can give them is going to change the trajectory of their life. And that's a great way to give back. So like, don't always be looking for opportunities to make money. Look for more opportunities to help people because the more people that you help, the more money you're going to make. And that's just, you know, business 101. So it doesn't matter if it's charity work, community work, the little kid who doesn't have two pennies to rub together because he's in high school and your DM's asking for help, like just help more, like spend more time helping more.
Yeah. Well, that's such inspiring stuff. And a lot of folks can, you know, take some good lessons from what you've mentioned from both starting out with, you know, small budgets, learn your way, learn your product, learn your customer, authenticity and branding, build your own brand, and also giving back. And I'm sure you get almost sometimes probably more enjoyment out of helping these guys at potential that sort of like mini-me's versions of you that you say, well, I'm going to try and create the next generation of me with the same kind of mindset or similar kind of mindset and pay it forward. Alex, this has been, you know, jam-packed with awesome things. I think we could chat longer, but I don't want to give too much juice away. This has been so insightful. I think maybe what we can do if we ever chat another time is go into, you know, some detail into the weeds of how to scale from, you know, $1,000 to $1 million. Because I think some people struggle with that. And especially us in Europe, where we just don't have the numbers of the states. We can't actually comprehend, you know, some of the numbers that you're talking about. We just don't have the numbers. So that might be fascinating. But really great chatting with you. And I hope you have a fantastic weekend. And I hope all the jewelry money doesn't go through Oprah and The Rock.
Nope. Well, I've seen a lot of time there, so I know a lot of locals who are actually doing things. You know? Yeah. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come on. And yeah, anytime you want to jump into more detailed stuff, just hit me up and be happy to share all my knowledge and wisdom with everybody and put them on that path so they can turn their overnight success into not a 6.5 year grant, but maybe a few.
Amen. Amen. Thanks, Alex.
Chat with Nicholas. He'll listen to you. Then he'll laugh and then he'll cry with you. It's all in a safe space for you to speak your truth.